You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.
This is New Hampshire Now, 109, 1415, NHTalkRadio.com. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the program. This hour of New Hampshire Now is presented by New England College, as well as Riverbend Community Mental Health. In this segment of the show, brought to you by Rath Young and Pignatelli, a national impact that's uniquely New Hampshire. More information, check out RathLaw.com. Paul Steinhauser, Todd Fahey, and myself sat down with U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota. Klobuchar surging after a strong performance in Tuesday's debate in the Granite State on Wednesday and Thursday as she hit all 10 New Hampshire counties in 30 hours on 3.5 hours sleep. And this is a really good interview. Encourage you to check it out. She is a very intriguing candidate, a left-of-center politician who operates in a way similar to Jean Shaheen and Maggie Hassan. If you look at their voting records, frequently evokes John McCain in her remarks, including in the closing of Tuesday night's debate. Here is our conversation with Amy Klobuchar. We're at the Barley House with U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar, who had a really strong debate on Tuesday night. I'm curious as to, you know, what this means, you think, for your campaign moving forward. Is this the breakout moment that you envision?
You know, people keep saying you're looking for a viral moment, which I think is funny. I went on Bill Maher with Howard Stern. I thought that might work. But for me, it's not necessarily one moment. It's building momentum and getting to know people. And that's one of the reasons I'm here today on this 10-county tour. Because the more I go and the more places I go and the more people I meet, the better it is. And what happened to me on that debate stage is I got to answer questions in a broad number of areas, and that didn't happen in the other ones. I got to talk about foreign relations and show what I would be like as a commander-in-chief. I got to talk about the opioid epidemic, which has hit New Hampshire so hard, and long-term care. I think I was the only one to bring up, which I think is one of the biggest issues facing New Hampshire and our country, and that's the aging of our population and making sure that they have places to live and get good health care. Overall, I was happy with the debate, and I also had a lot of fun out there.
That's important.
It is. The last debate, I actually stood next to Cory Booker and wrote him some amusing notes that one day I'll reveal. I think it is important that you have some joy campaigning because the president is such a negative force for our country. That would be a Minnesota euphemism. In terms of,
just like Minnesota nice?
Yeah, in terms of what he talks about, how he talks about, how he goes after people. And it's a very scary time for people. Mm-hmm. They're scared about what's going on around the world, understandably. They're scared about why is he writing weird letters and why is he, you know, putting our allies out for slaughter. But then we're in this campaign, and I think it's really important to do two things. Have an optimistic economic agenda for America, but also to have some joy about what you're doing and make them realize not every president is going to send a mean tweet in the mornings. I will never do that. You could have a different kind of president who's actually going to bring some happiness and joy to the work. And it doesn't mean it's easy or that everything is a picnic. It just means we've got to, as a country, take on these opportunities in a positive way. And I do see them, you know, coming up with new research and science for climate change. That's an opportunity. Figuring out when we have a low unemployment rate, how our seniors can still be in the workforce. A lot of them want to work. And how we can figure out smart ways to do housing and childcare. I actually see it as an exciting thing, especially in states like mine in Minnesota and New Hampshire, where you have all these entrepreneurs and people and students wanting to start new things. Let's make it so that our country is this leader again economically in the world.
You had a good performance in Houston. You had a great performance this week in Columbus. I was there. I got a chance to see it. What's next, though? You've got a debate in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. You haven't reached the criteria yet, or at least one of them. Yeah. Are you optimistic, A, that you can make it? And if you don't make that debate stage, how much does that hurt your campaign?
Okay. First of all, I'm very optimistic we're going to make it. We already have one poll in, and we've made all the other criteria the day that they announced it. We have more than enough donors. We just raised $1.2 million in 24 hours after this debate. Then I'm just going to keep getting out there. And New Hampshire is really important for me. Very important that my supporters answer calls about polls, yes. I feel that we're going to make it. And I'm going to be in for the end anyway. We have a number of offices here in this state. We've got a great state director, former legislator in Scott Merrick, and we put together a big operation. But I'm very hopeful that I'll make that stage.
And if you don't, you're still in it.
I'm still in it.
As Amy Klobuchar joining us, how bad is it, though, for the process if you, who are polling very well in Iowa right now, fourth or fifth in Iowa, you have a great ground organization, if you are left off the stage, what does that say about the process?
I'm just not thinking that's going to happen.
I don't think so either, but if
well,
it does.
I do think, okay, we have had a lot of candidates, 20-some candidates. I'm ahead of 18 of them, but I think that has contributed to it's hard for people who aren't as well-known,
right,
who are from smaller states. You think about people like Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton,
right,
who ended up doing well in those early states because people got to know them. They ended up leading the Democratic ticket, and they won. They were not the expected candidates, but they turned out to be the strongest candidates. And that's what New Hampshire gets,
yep,
because you look at people and you make a decision. And I hope that the process doesn't get broken down in some way. And I also think that you know, I'll just have to go with whatever cards I'm dealt. And I still believe we'll make that debate.
As we continue on the interview, we're going to focus on some of the issues affecting the middle class here in New Hampshire. Todd Fahey from AARP New Hampshire is with us. Go ahead, Todd.
Hello, hey, Todd. Senator. Good to see you.
Yes.
So we have about 225,000 members of AARP New Hampshire and about 500,000 people over 50 in our fine state. And so for more than a decade, brand name drug prices have gone up significantly faster than the rate of inflation. And a real telling New Hampshire statistic is the price of prescription drug treatment has increased 57.8% between 2012 and 2017. But at the same time, Granite Staters' income increased about 13.2% over that five-year period. So if you're elected president, what's the first thing you'll do to lower drug prices?
Well, we need to unleash the power of 43 million seniors. That's a lot of seniors across the country to get a better deal. And you do that through Medicare. I think it's outrageous that there's a law. There's a law that says Medicare can't negotiate better prices with the pharmaceutical company. So I have been leading the bill since I got to the Senate. I now have 34 senators on it that says we should be able to negotiate, just like the VA does or Medicaid does. They get much better prices. That's the first thing. Also, bring in less expensive drugs from other countries. In Minnesota, we can see Canada from our porch, and we see those cheaper prices over there with safe drugs. And so I think that would create this huge competitive pressure on pharmaceuticals if they even knew that you could have some competition coming in. And then I'd also stop the practice where big pharma companies pay off generic companies to keep their products off the market. That helps both of them, but it doesn't help consumers. I've been leading those efforts bipartisan, and I know as president I could get them done. And the less expensive drugs from other countries, you can do without Congress. You can actually apply for a waiver to bring in those drugs.
Will those make your first 100 days?
That is in my first 100 days because I can do it myself. The others will be pushing those bills through as to get it done because this is the number one issue, not just for seniors, but for people in this country, is the cost of prescription drugs. And you know why. There's two pharma lobbyists for every member of Congress, and very few of us have been taking this on from the beginning.
Go ahead, Todd.
Another question. So how would you specifically hold the drug companies accountable for the high prescription drug prices? I think you've articulated mm-hmm. some of the policy positions, and thank you for that.
Yeah, but it is really taking them on. We are glad we have these companies in America. There's a number of them actually in the Massachusetts area. But they've just had the run of the show. They can do whatever they want. So you've got to take them on with antitrust laws. I've led the effort for Democrats on antitrust. There's too much consolidation. And then every time they jerk people around by increased prices for simple things like insulin, you got to take it on.
Do you feel that the drug company should be held responsible for the opioid crisis? Because states like New Hampshire, Minnesota are footing the bill for a lot of what people feel the drug companies did. There have been some lawsuits in regards to this. Do you feel, particularly as a former prosecutor, that the drug company should be held responsible?
I do, and I'm glad there's these lawsuits going on all over the country. I think there'll be one big federal settlement where we want to get the money to the states. We have proof, as I mentioned on the debate stage, there was an email came out from one of the business executives at one of the companies where he said, keep pushing them out. They're like Doritos to them.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't talking about Doritos. He was talking about drugs that have killed people and have gotten people hooked, even small amounts. In Minnesota, we lost Prince, and we've lost college kids. And mm-hmm. you know the stories of towns in New Hampshire that have been decimated by this. So I think we need to do that. And that's one of our big issues for New Hampshire. But I want to point out the one thing when it comes to seniors that I deliberately brought up at that debate stage because nothing's been happening and we keep relitigating the Affordable Care Act, and that's long-term care.
Right. Mm-hmm. I may end with that. Social Security, big mm-hmm. issue for a lot of Grand Estaters. Again, a lot of people, for a lot of reasons, they're not ready for retirement. So they mm-hmm. come in to retirement and they rely upon Social Security. It's about $1,400 a month, average benefit in New Hampshire. So, you know, if nothing happens, no action is taken, there's a shortfall in 2035, resulting, as you know, in cuts in 2026. How would you update and strengthen Social Security and Medicare to keep those fundamental bedrock programs strong for Grand Estaters and all Americans?
You know, this is the biggest safety net we have in America. And when people started talking about privatizing Social Security, I was strongly opposed. And right now, we have a strong program, but we have one that we need to continue to shore up as we see more and more people living longer, which is a great thing. We want to make sure it's strong for everyone. And as you point out, it's going to start delivering less if we don't shore it up. My belief is that for Social Security, it's actually fairly easy. Right now, at $133,000 in income, you stop paying in Social Security taxes. What you could do is create kind of a donut hole. So that's true, but then you start paying again at $250,000 and above in income. That would be fair to everyone, and it would mean everyone gets Social Security. When it comes to Medicare, what we just talked about to bring costs down, it would help the government and taxpayers would be pharmaceutical prices under Medicare, as well as making sure that the system is there for our seniors and that we keep it strong and do everything we can to make sure it's high quality.
And one more, as I know you're trying to race around New Hampshire in our nor'easter today. So welcome to New Hampshire.
Come on. I announced in a blizzard. I can handle a little rain.
I understand. Appreciate that, too. A little bit of wind. What's your vision to help Americans live independently in their communities as they age? Big issue for New Hampshire, for our members. You know, second and oldest state in the nation, and people want to stay in place as they age. So what's it look like with a Klobuchar presidency?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd use two words, dignity and choice. And that means some seniors want to live in their homes, and we're seeing that more and more than we did in the old days. So we got to make sure that there's home health care delivery. That's going to be the fastest, one of the fastest growing occupations. There's going to be over 1 million openings in the next 10 years. So you want to make sure we have people filling those jobs that are qualified. That's part of why I'm so focused on not just four-year degrees, mm-hmm. right? You want to be able to make sure people can afford long-term care insurance and long-term care. That means keeping Medicaid strong, but a lot of people want to be able to afford their own health care and their own long-term care before they get on Medicaid, and they don't want to go through all their resources. What are the answers there? Affordable long-term care insurance. And I actually got an idea from Boston about a way to pay for this, and that is that people set up trust funds for their kids and that have a lot of money. And if you look at ones that are $500,000 and over, if you just simply tax some of the gain that they make on those, you could get in over $100 billion. And I would put that money toward helping people pay for long-term care insurance premiums so they get that long-term care insurance early and then helping pay for long-term care. I think, again, this is an exciting thing to work on. Other thing I want to thank AARP for leading on is making sure that seniors that want to keep working can work and that we see this as part of our workforce.
Yeah,
we don't
you.
Have enough people to fill jobs. How about our seniors?
Absolutely.
They're really hard workers, and they want to do it. I don't think they should have to work around the clock, but a lot of them want to work a few hours a week. So why don't we figure that out?
For sure.
Final thing for me is...
And by the way, I'm the only candidate in the race so far that has, and you can see it on my on our Twitter feed, not that everyone's on there. I have a 109-year-old endorser, and she did a video for me. Her name's Ruth. She was born in 1910. Come on, this is a good AARP story.
It's a great story. I'm listening.
And she has been through 18 presidents.
Wow.
And so she's a very good judge. She's as smart as could be, incredible woman, and she thinks I should be the 19th. And she wants out of this. She wants to make sure that she gets an invitation to this ceremony and she can bring a friend.
That's cool.
That is a true story.
That's
check
a great
it out
story.
On our website.
Will do.
Yeah.
Final thing on the middle class in regards to costs. And we have so many families in this state where you'll have an income of $100,000 to $150,000 amongst two individuals, and that's just not enough. Individuals are falling behind. Some even find themselves on food stamps or looking for other ways of assistance. And it's not obviously because they're not making money. It's because of all the other costs that go with living. How, as president, would you go about reducing the costs and debt load on so many middle-class Americans who have are making good wages but are just struggling as a result of the debt?
And you got it. That's what this really is about. A lot of people can get jobs, especially here, but they don't always have enough money to cover the costs. So the first thing I look at is let's make sure their wages are good enough, and that means increasing the minimum wage and all kinds of things we can do. But the second thing is let's start whittling away at those costs so they have a little more pocket change so they can go on vacation and save for things. You do that by shoring up Social Security and savings account, looking at the fact that not all of our people are at jobs that you get full-time 401ks. We want to promote 401ks, and that's why this idea for up savings account would let people save a little and their employers contribute at every job they have, and then they add them up to the end, and it's a lot of money, creating a tax environment that allow that to happen, making it easier to afford child care, looking at that Trump tax bill that contributes over $1 trillion in debt and changing it, the regressive parts. I mean,
would you focus it more on middle-class tax relief?
Completely. I'd keep the middle-class tax relief in there. But then the tax relief that only helped the wealthy people, I would bring that back. That was unfair, and it added to the debt, and then it was on the shoulders of middle-class people because it added to the debt so much. They're the ones that are going to be left holding the bag if we don't do anything about the debt and if we keep giving away tax giveaways to the money, to the rich. When President went down to Mar-a-Lago, he actually said to his friends after he signed it into law, well, you guys just got a lot richer. He thought that was funny. That's what he said.
Yeah.
And we've got to be clear with people, including people that voted for him. Look what he did to you. Let's get some of that money back. We still want to be a successful economic engine here in America. We want people to succeed and do well in the economy. I sure do. I came out of the private sector. But that doesn't mean that you give them a bunch of tax giveaways at the expense of everyone else.
Senator Klobuchar, I really appreciate your time, and you're certainly a candidate that deserves New Hampshire's attention.
Yes.
And you've spoken well and articulately on the issues, been here a lot, and it's good to see you rising
in
the polls.
That means a lot. I'm excited, and we'll be back soon, even when it's rain, shine, or snow. You're going to find me here.
There's U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar. This is New Hampshire Now, 1-9-1450 and nhtalkradio.com. I am Chris Ryan. This hour of the program presented by New England College, as well as Riverbend Community Mental Health. And that segment of the program brought to you by Rath Young and Pignatelli, proud sponsors of New Hampshire Primary Interviews here on the New Hampshire Now program.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.